Good morning. My name is Kai, and I am an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. With me today is Sarah, who is also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is People Helping People. I'd like to thank WHLL 1450 AM for allowing us the opportunity to share something about our alcoholism and the solution we have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions expressed here this morning are solely those of the individuals who express them and not those of WHLL 1450 AM or of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. People Helping People is focused on how AA can provide help to people who have a problem with drinking. Alcoholics can be helped to stop drinking with the support of other alcoholics who have achieved sobriety and who gladly share how they did it, like the people here today. One alcoholic helping another is the basic premise of the Fellowship AA. Well over 2.9 million people in over 150 countries follow the AA recovery program. Here in Western Massachusetts, we have over 400 AA meetings a week, with approximately 6,000 members staying away from a drink one day at a time. The American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association recognize alcoholism as a disease. It is a progressive illness that can never be cured, but like other diseases, can be arrested. We feel that this disease is a combination of a physical sensitivity to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession. The best short description of what AA is and how it works that I know of is what we call the preamble. I'll read it for you now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now I would like to introduce my guest, Sarah, who will briefly tell us what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. After that, I'll provide you with some information about how and where to get help.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic, and I've been sober since December 22nd, 2000, and I'm really, really very grateful for that. So I'm kind of a garden variety alcoholic. There's nothing really extraordinary about my story. I found out when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I come from a family where there was a lot of drinking in the home. My dad was one of eight kids, and they worked very hard. My grandfather owned a contracting business, and pretty much all his kids worked for him. And, you know, my grandparents' house was like the center of the universe. And basically, in my family, you know, you work very hard, and when you're not working, you party. And that was very attractive to me. So I had a lot of cousins, as you might imagine, with all those aunts and uncles. So a lot of cousins. And we all, it's funny because looking back now and looking at pictures of us, we all look just alike. And you would never know that I felt like I was, you know, so different from everyone else and so uncomfortable in my skin as a really little person, as far back as I can remember. So, you know, there was, as I said, alcohol in the home, and my father had a lot of struggles with alcohol. My mother was not a drinker. And, you know, I just remember a lot of tension in the house. Whether my father was drinking or not, but more actually after he had stopped drinking. Because of the trouble he had, he stopped drinking for a number of years, and things in my house actually seemed to get worse during that time, because everybody was so on edge. And, you know, that was kind of my example of what it was like to be sober, or what it was like to not drink, which I know now is, you know, doesn't have to be that way. But But at the time, you know, it seemed like he was different from everyone else because he wasn't drinking and he wasn't, you know, as much fun as he used to be. Things were really tense in our house. We were walking on eggshells all the time. And fast forward to when I was 11, Christmas. The year I was 11, I had my first drink. And, you know, I remember that drink like it had this heavenly glow around it. It was like a very 80s drink, a Bartles and James lime wine cooler, 4-pack that was designated for me because I couldn't go to the keg party because I was too young. And, you know, I was devastated that I couldn't go to that party, but the only thing that would have made it any better was a 4-pack of Bartles and James lime wine cooler. So I was really grateful, to my aunt who had bought it for me. And, you know, I was not supposed to get the whole 4-pack, but I lied and kind of cheated my way into all four. And I got drunk that night for the first time ever. And I can tell you that was the night that I knew, you know, that sense of ease and comfort that comes with a few drinks. And, you know, suddenly I didn't feel different from all my cousins. I felt like I was one among them, and in fact maybe a little better, maybe a little smarter, maybe a little funnier. You know, I just, it transformed me, and it transformed the way I felt about myself, and it transformed the way I could be in the world. And I remember going into the bathroom that night on my own and looking in the mirror. And it's like I could close my eyes right now and see it. I looked in the mirror and I just knew, like, this was what I've been looking for. This is what I'm going to have to do for the rest of my life. And so, you know, as 11, it's really hard to get alcohol when you're 11 years old. But I, you know, it became a full-time obsession of how to, you know, get the money and who's going to buy it for me and where am I going to hide it? And then where am I going to drink it? Who am I going to drink it with? What am I going to tell my parents to get out of the house? What do we say if we get caught? I mean, it was this constant calculation of how I can get drunk again. And that went on for years and years, like through middle school. And then in high school, things became a little different because, you know, I wasn't the only one that was interested in drinking. I found the people that were, you know, working on that full-time obsession as well. And they were a lot like me. And, you know, drinking became a daily thing probably when I was about 15. At this time, my parents had gotten separated. We had moved all around. School wasn't going so well for me anymore. I usually had I had pretty good grades in general, but in high school they really started to fall off. And I started getting into, like, you know, real trouble, like detentions and suspensions. And, you know, my parents had so much going on just with the two of them that it was not, any trouble I had before that time wasn't really noticeable, but it certainly started to get noticeable in, like, sophomore year, junior year of high school. And my father had started drinking again my junior year of high school and passed away really suddenly. He was driving drunk and died one night in February, and it was just like a huge shock to our whole family. And, you know, at that point I was drinking alcoholically already, and, you know, the death of my father just was kind of gasoline on a fire for me. And, you know, the rest of high school, the first couple of years of college, were, I mean, really, reckless, alcoholic, destructive years. I barely graduated from high school. I barely got into college, and then I pretty quickly got thrown out of college. I moved around a lot. I moved, from Boston to San Diego to Portsmouth. I mean, I moved all around to try to find a place where it would work for me and figure out, like, you know, how I can drink the way I want to drink and be employed and go to school and, you know, get all of that stuff that, you know, you're kind of supposed to have. I had a lot of good friends that drank really heavily. But, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't have the kind of problems I had. And I remember I was just fascinating. I would just watch them to try to see, you know, what they were doing that I needed to do. Like, what was I doing wrong? And I could never figure it out. And what I know now is, like, you know, I was an alcoholic. They may or may not have been alcoholic, but they were certainly not in the type of shape that I was in. So, you know, I'm 24 years old, living in an apartment in New Hampshire. I have a job, you know, a 40-hour-a-week job. I live, like, within the walking distance of about 30 bars. And I think life is great most of the time, until I, you know, forget to go to work and have to go into work one more time, basically drunk still from the night before, or I don't have enough money to pay my rent because I kind of forgot when I was drunk and spent it all at the bar. You know, big problems. And, you know, at this point, I had a really small world. I didn't have a lot of, aside from people I would drink with at the bar, I didn't have a ton of friends that would drink with me because I was really a liability. I mean, if we were out somewhere, you know, I would just, like, take off, or I would you know, be way too drunk, way too early in the night. And, you know, I was just difficult to be with. It was not fun to, you know, babysit me when I was drinking. So, you know, there were a handful of people that I would still go out and drink with. A few of them were my cousins, and because, you know, they were kind of stuck with me. and then I, you know, got to the point where it was almost like the hangovers were so bad. I mean, I was a healthy young person, but the hangovers were really so bad that I could barely go to work and work 40 hours a week. And, you know, I was starting to have these, I think I'm kind of a pretty smart person. I know that my father had a really bad history with alcohol, but I think that I'm going to be able to figure things out before, you know, anything gets that bad. But, you know, the thing I didn't know is that this disease of alcoholism lives in my mind, and trying to think my way out of it is just not going to work, because that's where the problem is. But, you know, I didn't know that. And I started having these episodes where, you know, I would wake up in kind of, you know, a panic, like I had to go to work immediately, and I would, like, start to get ready to go to work. I would even get in the shower, and, you know, I'd realize it was, like, the middle of the night on the weekend, and I didn't have to be at work for a couple of days, and that got my attention, and that scared me. Around this time, I ended up, you know, it was too hard to try to, you know, get myself together and go to work every day, because I was drinking so much that, you know, I was physically sick almost every day. So I moved home, to be with my mother, and, you know, my mom was a member of Al-Anon, And she had lived with an alcoholic for many years, you know, with my dad. And I knew that I didn't have much time there to, you know, get my act together. She was not going to, like, just keep me there no matter what. So I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous because of my uncle. One of my uncles is sober. And I knew about AA. And honestly, I always thought, like, I'll go there when things get really bad. When things are, you know, I'm no longer able to control stuff, I'll go there. So I, you know, I knew where every meeting in town was, basically. I would drive through the parking lots. I was too afraid to go inside. And I, you know, I tried to get some jobs here and there, but I mean, I just wasn't able to do my normal restart. Like, I would move all around and, you know, kind of try to get my life back together. And normally that worked, but this time it just was not working. And fast forward to Christmas of 2000, and I'm living in my mom's house still. I'm unemployed, pretty much unemployable. No real prospects on the horizon. Basically retired, 25. And my brother came home from school. So, you know, my brother grew up, he's got the same DNA as me, same drinking family, same father, same household, same environment that he grew up in, but he's not alcoholic. And, you know, he came home from his, like, good college that he goes to and opened the door, and he didn't know I was living in our mom's house. He didn't expect to see me there. And for whatever reason, the moment of clarity that I had, the moment that I was really able to see what was going on with my life and to kind of see all of the discouraged, you know, fear and shame and sadness and frustration was like that moment when I saw it, that unguarded moment I saw it on my brother's face. And for whatever reason, that was it for me. I mean, I had plenty of situations that should have scared me, you know, to the same kind of extent that, you know, being pulled into, like, the backseat of a cruiser for, you know, public drunkenness, or, you know, one time I lost my car in a not very big parking garage and started screaming at the attendant, and, you know, he called the cops. Like, stuff like that should have been a real wake-up call that things weren't going very well. But, you know, for whatever reason, that was my moment with my brother, where I could just see he was really the only person that could talk to me about what I was doing, because all of my excuses were about, you know, where I had come from in my family. And he was the only person who really understood that. So, you know, because I knew where all the meetings were in my town, I just went to one. And it was kind of, you know, scary, because who likes to walk into a room where you don't know anyone and ask for help because you can't manage your life? But, you know, that's what I did. My first meeting was a speaker meeting on Wednesday night, and this was the town where I'm from in Connecticut. And, you know, I remember everything the speaker said that night, and I knew that I was an alcoholic from listening to that speaker, and I also knew that the people that I saw there were happy and sober. And that was, you know, for me enough to just have this flicker of hope to come back the next night. And I went back. I knew there was a meeting in the same room the next night. And that following night, I met a woman who was about my age. She was 26, I think. And she spoke about, you know, all the same things that I had going on, like trying to, you know, move to a different state or go to a different college or you know, quitting jobs and starting new jobs, or, you know, whatever to make it work. Willing to do anything, willing to, you know, change my life in any way I thought it would be better, but never being willing to look at the alcohol. And I could relate to that. And she talked about, you know, having all these strained relationships with her family and her friends because of her drinking. And I could relate to that too. But then she started to share about, you know, having repaired all those relationships and being employable and going. She had just started at graduate school, and it was her dream to do that. And I could not imagine that that would be true for me. And again, I got like that flicker of hope that this might actually work for me. And the truth is, you know, when I got here, I really didn't think that this would work for me. I really thought, you know, I had tried so many things that I was pretty hopeless that things could be different. And, you know, I saw the 12 steps on the wall, and I thought, that's really not enough. That's not going to put a dent in what's wrong with me. And I'm really grateful that I was wrong about that. So, you know, I started working with that woman. I asked her to sponsor me, and I started working with her right away. And it was, you know, pretty amazing. Within the first couple of months, people around me, like some of my cousins that were still in my life, you know, I was on the phone with one of them, and she said, "What have you done with my cousin? You're just so different." And I remember people saying that the people around you will notice the difference before you will. And, you know, I got a job and I got promoted right away. And I remembered people telling me, like, once you're able to kind of show up and be employable, you're going to do great. And, you know, everything that I heard in the room started happening for real in my life. And it, you know, just gave me more and more reason to go on with the steps and more hope that my life could be different. And, you know, that first year was really, there was a ton of hope in it, but it wasn't easy. And it's hard to kind of learn how to how to kind of relearn everything. But it was really worth it for me. And I felt free. Like there was so much of my former life that, you know, I couldn't do because, you know, I wouldn't be able to drink at some certain thing, or I was too afraid to do something else. And, you know, that really changed when I came to AA and got sober. Like anything was possible. And when I was about 6 or 7 years sober, I had never left the country when I was drinking. And all of a sudden, you know, just one opportunity after another came up. And within like 6 months, I had gone to Europe and Africa and Asia. And, you know, I realized, first of all, I can go anywhere in the world because I'm, you know, I'm free today. I'm like, I'm sober all the time. You know, it's like I never thought I'd be one of those people that could be responsible every minute of the day. And, you know, I could do that. And, you know, the other thing is that AA is everywhere. I've been to AA meetings in Africa and Asia and all over Europe. And, you know, there's always someone there. Even in the most remote places that I've been, there have been people in AA. I went to a meeting in a Muslim country where there's no alcohol allowed, but there was AA. There was a very small meeting, only 3 people, but I mean, it was still there. So, I mean, it's really incredible. Today, my life is very different. I'm very employable. I've been pretty constantly employed since I got sober. I'm a mom and a wife, and I get to be, you know, part of my family. Part of what is so great about being sober these days is that I'm able to really be of real help to my mother, who's, you know, getting older and had such a tough time with me and my father. You know, now I can help her. And, you know, I get to show up in my family and be the person I always really wanted to be. And it continues to get better. You know, it's been almost 19 years since I got sober. Next week will be 19 years. And it continues to amaze me. In one way, it feels like a year has gone by. The other, it feels like a lifetime ago that I drank. But yeah, it continues to get better. And I'm very, very grateful.
I would like to thank WHLL 1450 AM again and Sarah for being here. Before we go, I'd like to make the audience aware of two AA committees that are available to the general public and to the professional community. There are the Public Information Committee and the Cooperation with the Professional Community Committee. For more information, please call our Western Mass Intergroup at 413-532-2111. Write them at Western Mass Intergroup, 474 Pleasant Street, Holyoke, Mass. 01040, or reach them online at westernmassaa.org. Western Mass Intergroup's number is in the telephone directory and is also a 24-hour hotline number if you ever need to talk to someone. I'll repeat that number, 413-532-2111. If you or somebody you know is experiencing difficulty accessing an AA meeting, please contact our Accessibility Committee at 413-532-3752. For more information regarding Al-Anon or Alateen, please call 413-782-3406. Both of these lines are open 24 hours. Thank you for listening, and please remember, you do not have to stop drinking alone.